So greetings, everybody. I'm going to be talking a little bit from a different perspective. I'm going to be talking about how we actually responded to a public health disaster that was from a storm. But as has been noted, climate change is going to create just a huge number of different kinds of public health health risks. And these are what I'm not going to talk about, but that are certainly things that we need to be concerned about. And one is how climate change is really going to possibly change the face of how we actually produce food, not just in this country, but worldwide, and how that will in turn wind up creating food security issues. And we've already seen, even just with the kinds of storm changes that have happened, increased hurricanes, and these children that are on the bottom left actually were in a line after hurricane hit Mexico, and they lost access to their food in that area. I'm also not going to talk about excessive heat, and this is one where in Chicago several years ago, several hundred people died without a real robust public health response to high heat over prolonged periods of time. And a couple of years after that, a couple of my graduate students looked to see what several major cities were doing in terms of their preparation for excessive heat. And nobody was mapping where the shut-ins were. They had cooling centers, but there were people with big mobility issues. Nobody knew exactly where they are. Sometimes the fire department does this, but we're still incredibly, from a public health perspective, unprepared in urban settings to address this issue when we have the next big one, and we will have another big heat wave. So what I am going to talk about is increased storm activities. And we know that we have been certainly having a variety of storms in a variety of perfect storm configurations over the last several years, and they have left incredible devastation in their past pathways. What we often don't think about is, I mean, the storm happens, but then there are all of the infrastructure destruction that happens in their wake. And we are not in a place right now to be surging our state dollars to fix these kinds of things. And this is just sort of a rough estimate is that in the past, about since 2005, $800 billion of destruction has been done through these various sort of high impact storms that we've had, including the tornadoes and the hurricanes, et cetera. So this is something that we really need to begin to address. And I was talking to a colleague from California who was talking to her people at the State Health Department about passing a bond that would actually create some funding to address the infrastructure issues. We also know that years later, and these are pictures from New Orleans, years later, that sometimes the communities remain. People have fled and never come back. People have not really reclaimed their communities in the way they once were. And we know that there is, even today, these pictures on top and the next slide show pictures that are from the news in the last 3 days. In Bangkok. We know that these kinds of things internationally are happening as well. And these are also photographs. These are from yesterday morning, photographs in Bangkok. So we're seeing immense changes. And with that, we're seeing these huge then refugees from these large events. This is not a picture from a developing country. This is actually a picture that is people that were fleeing from the Katrina hurricane several years ago. And I'm going to be speaking to that issue because the University of Maryland, where I work, has these two bookmobiles. I call them that because they're wellness centers, but they're in, people know what bookmobiles are. And so we took these health centers on wheels down immediately. Their governor asked our governor, and we wound up in Mississippi with them. So I'm going to talk a little bit about my experience there as a sort of a case study in learning what I think and believe we still don't have exactly right. We are not prepared for large surges of population that may happen with these big events. And after Katrina, I know a lot of people that were watching from around the country were seeing people in the dome. The dome had a small percentage of the people that actually were affected and wound up. There were people staying in barns. There were people staying on the roadsides. There were people just staying and trying to make do. The poorest people, obviously, were the folks without transportation. There weren't contingencies made to get them to where they were going. They didn't have any money, so they could get to the next town to get on a Greyhound bus and go someplace else, and many of them had no someplace else to go. So I worked in two towns there because the sort of relief workers were not going into the areas where they were already telling people it was unsafe to be. So the relief workers needed to be just outside that area. So we were in two small towns, Macomb and Brookhaven, Mississippi. Now, their base population in Macomb was 12,790. The base population in Brookhaven was 9,861. And within just a couple of days, those populations went up double-fold. And so let me tell you what, in fact, saved us in the South, and this does not exist all over the country. It was the churches. Massive churches. So I'm from the North. I didn't understand churches in the South. How many of you are from the South? Holy catfish. It was just amazing. It's like when you go into the South, into a city, they say, "How are you? What church do you go to?" That is the question. And I had no idea. You know, you read about this, but you're down there. These places are massive. This is a gymnasium in a church, and this is not uncommon to have these very, very massive structures that have schools and gymnasiums. And the other thing that saved us is all of these places had commercial kitchens. Big. And so if you're in a place that doesn't have Southern churches and Southern cooking, which I have to tell you was the bright spot in my several weeks living in a tent in these two little places, was Southern cooking. But the other thing that we had were beds. And I don't know whether any of you have done any kind of disaster relief. The American Red Cross has, as much as it was criticized, it has its act together. So we had the big spaces in the churches, and we had the cots that came from the American Red Cross, but that's not the only thing. So it used to be an adage in the 70s, a bed built in a hospital was a bed filled. Well, we had this, you know, a bed created in one of these churches was a bed filled. And that was, we were housing 10,000 people, mostly in these churches. Now, there still were a few in barns and daycare centers and a few other places, but mostly we had them in the churches. And the American Red Cross, the volunteers, for those of you who don't know, they are literally in practically every community. And they have these things called ERBs, I discovered, emergency response vehicles. And almost all American Red Cross stations have them. And when an event like this happens, they are on the road. And they're mostly or substantially retirees, or sometimes people who can get off work and get into an ERV and go to wherever the place is. So these folks came with additional equipment, but they also came with some know-how that did not exist in these two communities before they came. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what that know-how was, some of which is still a mystery to me. So the other thing that happened within days was that we took over a couple of warehouses that were out in the community that had been empty, and suddenly within a couple of days they were full. Now, when you think about 20,000 additional people in these two little communities, I want you to just think of two things: Pampers, Tampax. It's a whole lot more Pampers and Tampax. I mean, that's just one simple little thing that you don't think about needing a surge of, right? But there were a whole mess of other things we needed as well. But they started arriving. Children's pajamas, refrigerated truckloads of chicken. Now, we have the kitchens to cook them in, but they were arriving, and the American Red Cross was organizing and orchestrating that. And it was really pretty incredible. And in the warehouse, it was these young people who were living on cots, working 24/7, doing incredible work. But that's another thing to think about. If you're in a community where, and you might get a surge, either from a coastal surge or something like this, where are your warehouses? Where is this stuff going to come and stay dry and be able to then be transported out? We also had, 20,000 new people in this little area. We had folks who already were either infirmed in one way or another. We had pregnant women. So one of the churches, all we had in that church gymnasium were pregnant women and women who had newborns. And that's how we kind of kept that little group a little bit sane and separate. But also what I didn't realize is the American Red Cross also deploys mental health folks. What do you do with your psychiatric patients? Or people in the community who already are vulnerable in terms of mental health issues? And what they did, which was brilliant, is they commandeered a motel and commandeered housing, and they got those folks out of the population. So you need to do that, because this is a population that I literally watched a man who was pulling his hair out as he was talking in Turkish on a telephone in one of the churches. We needed to get that gentleman someplace else, because there was also already enough sort of high impact, high anxiety, deer in the headlight activities. Kids had lost their dogs, everybody was already stressed to the max. And we had the elderly frail. We had women in the line for the FEMA checks who were in labor, in line for FEMA checks. It was pretty incredible. The other thing that happened was that a lot of the families just were dying to get back to see what happened to their home. What was it like now? The waters had retracted in some places. Some of our families, many of them were from the Biloxi hurricane problems, not New Orleans. And so we got word that you needed to have a tetanus shot in order to go back in, that there was going to be, and you're shaking your head. So we get this word. So we're these nurses who are trying to figure out, let's get 20,000 doses of tetanus, right? We go to the local health department, which is business as usual. It's quiet in there. Nobody even seems to be paying attention to the fact they've got 10,000 more people in their town. It was remarkable to me. And we said, we understand that we need tetanus shots for these people. And they said, we have two doses. That's the God's honest truth. And they didn't know how to get more. So tetanus is obviously not something you would always need, but it was something for us to realize that there was a real disconnect here between that small local health department, which local health departments. I know you're running as fast as you can. So this is not a diss on that. That's just a kind of something to pay attention to. This was the biggest thing we did with our bookmobile health centers, was people had left in such a hurry. What does that one mean? Am I completely over?
No, but...
Was that 3 minutes? No, just...
Three.
Oh, good, I'm good.
But not time for questions. So.
Okay, I'm not so good. people left home without their insulin, hypertension medications, antipsychotic medications. People left in a hurry or were on the roofs and then got, picked up by helicopters, etc. So the biggest thing, honestly, that we did was that we prescribed meds and got the meds. And Walmart, which is in town, Walmart gave, if we wrote a script, they filled it, no questions asked. Filled. So we also helped to manage the lines for FEMA, because that was a huge issue. And then the, what are those local armies called at the state level?
National Guard.
Thank you. Sounds like there's a little National Guard. They came in. So just one thing that I would like you all to consider, if in fact you are working on these kinds of issues, because nobody seemed to do this in that area at all. A lot of the preparedness funding over the last several years has gone to nuclear, biological, and chemical terrorism. But we're more likely to be seeing more of these kinds of events. And our hospitals in many areas are short of staff already. So surging a place that is already short of staff is questionable. We've never been asked at our nursing school to be part of a surge. We have a huge atrium. We could be triaging across the streets of the hospital. A lot of nursing schools, clearly medical schools, are incorporating the medical, because we're faculty who teach critical care and emergency and public health and other things. So for those of you who are working on these kinds of things, I would like you to please consider how you might differently incorporate this for us for surging. And think collaboratively, get in touch now with your local Red Cross, if you're not already talking with them about how you're going to interface, because they were absolutely huge and they knew what they were doing. And that's it. Okay, so thank you.